No. Yes.
Yes.
That's
yes.
From Tron. I've not seen Tron still.
Oh, right. That's that little program.
No.
Yes. Yes.
Do you think we can navigate this memory bit?
Yes.
He kind of like hums into it, doesn't he?
Yes.
There you go.
Yes. No.
Does he mean, like, does he say, like, full sentences with that?
I don't think so.
Yes? No, he just says, he just answers yes or no questions.
I think it's because he's, like, a very basic program.
Yeah, he's a very basic, all
he can
do is
why does he say no many no's in a row?
He was like, they were about to crash, I think, or something, and he was just panicking.
No.
Do you think that we could supercut the Shia LaBeouf no with Big?
I hope so.
No.
Oh my god, that would be amazing. Welcome to the Why Watch Podcast, the podcast where three friends get together, drink a themed cocktail, and watch a deeply flawed movie and attempt to fix it. I am Chris, sister of my soul, Ravel.
I am Lee, the greatest poet since Shakespeare, Delahanty.
And I am Brendan, swinging head of George Bernard Shaw Drishler.
Tonight, we owe those amazing nicknames to one Lindsay Lohan movie called Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen.
2004.
From 2004. It's a real mess, and we're going to get to that in just a second. But as always, these movies would be remiss if we weren't trying to soften the blow that they inflict upon us with a little bit of alcohol.
Right.
Tonight, we actually had like a little miniature flight of drinks. We had three different cocktails. In this case, the concept being that these would be the pre-bottled cocktails that Lindsay Lohan's character's mom would need to be, like, guzzling constantly to put up with her daughter in this movie because she's a psycho. So the three drinks we had is a Flamingo in a Flock of Pigeons, which was a little bit of Watermelon Spindrift, which is a seltzer water, mixed with a shot of vodka and floated with some sparkling wine. The Santini Martini, which was Blood Orange San Pellegrino, mixed with a shot of vodka and sparkling wine. And the Something from the Drama Room was some mango lemonade mixed with sparkling wine and a shot of vodka. So we poured them into some fancy martini glasses and had ourselves a little Why Watch sleepover party. We're all in our PJs. We have our nails painted.
Face
masks on.
Incorrect.
As always.
Incorrect. So what'd you guys think of the drinks?
I didn't have the mango lemonade one because I think mango is the devil. But I really enjoyed the other two a lot. I mean, I'm just a sucker for champagne.
That's fine.
And vodka and gin are just like the two liquors I'm always okay with.
Yeah, I also only had two. I had the Santini Martini, the orange one, and something from the Drama Room, which was yellow.
Drama.
And I liked and I liked both of them a lot. I probably liked the orange one a little bit better because I think the Drama Room one was a little heavy on vodka for me.
Yeah, that was my fault. But overall, I think it was success.
Yeah, no, I mean, they were both like, they were all like empty, fruity, brainless drinks, like
basically,
very appropriate.
Much like the movie.
Which is this
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, like just like nothing but like sugar and alcohol, which is like really what you should be drinking while watching this movie, because this movie is, as the French would
but
say, a trifle.
But, you say that, but the watermelon one had very little calories.
Oh yeah, no, I know. It's still a sweet drink.
It was
yeah.
sweet, but like the watermelon one wasn't overwhelming.
Sweet and not
filling. You wouldn't have had it, because you don't really...
Well, I mean, I'm drinking the seltzer right now. It's not that good.
They have other ones.
Though, don't you?
I don't like watermelon.
Why are you drinking watermelon seltzer?
His definition of insanity is drinking watermelon seltzer over and over again, expecting different results.
Oh, yeah.
That makes sense. So yeah, now that we're talking about the empty candy-coated shell of this movie, who wants to like take a crack at the plot?
I would like a go, Mr. Trebek. But all right, so I'll have a go, and if I need help,
we'll fill in the blanks.
If I lose the plot, I'll popcorn it over to you guys.
Please.
So yeah, it's adapted from a young adult novel, ostensibly meant to be your sort of like run-of-the-mill high school drama, and it basically starts off with this premise that Lindsay Lohan's character, Mary slash Lola.
She goes by Lola.
She goes by
Lola.
Because she believes that she
is
truly
a Lola.
On the inside, since she was 5 years old, is a Lola.
She sure is a Lola.
And that's like about the third line that she says, and that's how you immediately know that she's just a terrible person on the inside. Has her single mom and two siblings?
Her
kids.
Twin. She has twin younger sisters.
It's established that it's an unwed mother yeah. with three kids, which is a problem for some people, apparently. In 2004. They're moving to the faraway land of New Jersey, literally one state away. Probably, like, I mean, they are actually a train ride.
Yeah, they can literally take the train to New York.
But this is, like, basically the end of the world for Lindsay Lohan's character.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And she's, sort of, like, is this opening monologue of how she believes that she's, like, a legend waiting to be born.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how she meant to do that in New York City, but now she has to do it in, like, some shit high school. In
she
New
said
Jersey.
Delwood.
I believe she...
Delwood slash...
More like Deadwood.
Yeah.
Swearingen.
Swearingen. Al Swearingen.
That would be amazing.
Vice Principal Al Swearingen.
He'd be like, listen, you cocksucker.
Cocksucker was the big one on Deadwood.
That's right. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I believe she
said... God, what a great... Better movie that would have been.
I believe as they're pulling into town, she says, goodbye dreams of becoming... Chances of becoming a successful actress.
Yeah, go figure. But anyway, she arrives in this town and she quickly sort of decides, despite being, like, you know, super emo about moving to New Jersey, that she's going to, like, make a huge impact on school. This is, like, a blank slate for her, so she can go and be, like, amazing.
Right.
She shows up and very quickly encounters, like, number one, her what will be her quote-unquote best friend.
Her designated
best
friend.
The sister of her soul.
Yeah, the sister of her soul.
Ella Gerard.
Ella Gerard, who's played by...
Allison Pill.
Ostensibly is, like, we really don't get shown the social strata of this high school, but, right. Like, Ella is by no means, like, a loser, but she's clearly not, like,
Megan Fox's characters implies very often, it's a very good case of, again, tell, don't show, but Megan Fox repeatedly says, this girl's a loser, stay away, and all the other kids seem to be very nice.
Ella never had a fella.
Because you really only get to see, like, five of these kids.
Right, there are only five students in the school.
Yeah, and, like... and they quickly become friends, and they realize they have the same favorite band, Arthur.
Siddharthur, with the hunky lead singer, Stu Wolf.
Stu Wolf.
Played by Adam Garcia.
But Ella conveniently likes the other guy.
You're right, so they never have to claw each other's eyes out when it comes down to it. It could have been, again, a much better ending.
And the next immediate character she meets is her, like, immediate rival, Carla Santini.
Right.
Played by Megan Fox.
I think it may have been Megan Fox pre-nose job,
too. This was, like, three noses ago.
Megan Fox noses ago.
Yeah.
And it kind of quickly becomes apparent that, like, this is going to be, like, your number one opponent to becoming, you know, the queen bitch in the school.
And
the
it boss. Starts off immediately.
Yeah, the rivalry starts immediately, except that the first conversation with them is very baffling on both ends. Like,
yes.
It just seems like Carla's being mean, and she's just being nice back, but it's a little bit weird. Anyways, she meets those two characters. She also meets... For what it's worth,
Sam.
Her half-hearted love interest, Sam.
Quarter-hearted.
Who seems to only show up when we need to be reminded that she has a teenage love interest.
Right. He shows up when the women in the movie summon him. When they need a hug, or they need someone to steal a dress, or fix a car. Sam manifests himself out of thin air.
So the conflict emerges, I guess, twofold, which is the first one being that there's a high school musical, which is a modern version of Pygmalion called
Eliza Rocks
with a whole bunch of licensed songs that would be vastly expensive to produce.
And like, what it, like, I have to say, though,
changes
Pygmalion as a musical. Brilliant. I mean, it's just like, what next, guys, right? A rap musical about Alexander Hamilton?
No, get out.
No one ever mentions My Fair Lady. It's like that musical.
No, what I love about that no one ever says, like, hey, why don't we do My Fair Lady? No, for all we know, in this universe, there is no My Fair Lady. A horrible universe.
Yeah. What a horrible place to live.
Anywho.
They're doing this production, and there is no, the auditions have yet to happen. So Lindsay Lohan quickly is like, oh, I have to be Eliza, even though she liked musicals in the movie.
She says something like, goodbye, Broadway.
Yeah.
Like, she's like a baby Jenna Maroney as they're leaving. Yeah.
So she...
Yes. She is a baby Jenna Maroney.
She is.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
She auditions for the part. She does get it by, like, she's not prepared for the musical audition. She thinks it's going to be a play, but she manages to pull it out of her ass by singing a Siddharthur song.
Yeah.
But she gets the part of Eliza, immediately beating her rival. So, like, that conflict is just gonzo. And then it is announced on the radio that the band Siddharthur is breaking up, which is heartbreaking for both Ella and Lola.
They're having a farewell concert.
They're having a farewell concert in
New York
City.
And a farewell after party.
And an after party at Stu Wolf's house. And Carla immediately says, like, my dad's a lawyer, so I get to go to the concert and I get to go to the party. And Lola immediately decides, like, to outclass her. She needs to also get into the concert.
Right. She also says, I have tickets, too. She doesn't just decide, I need to go there. She lies and says, I got tickets.
She lies outright.
Yeah.
By this point, she's already also lied about her dad being dead.
Right.
Because...
She tells Ella that her father was killed.
Yeah.
In a motorcycle accident.
Because it's vaguely offensive to her that they don't... That the town has a problem. Or at least
Ella's mom has a problem with the fact that Lola's mom is apparently a single mother.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre that she has a problem with a divorced mother.
Yeah, we're living in Trump's America in this movie. Lola has already lied majorly twice in this movie so far.
Yes. So she strings Ella along into this madcap plan.
Yeah. There's more lying proceeds as they need to scheme to get first tickets to this concert,
right,
which is sold out, and also to get to this party where, like, they have to go to New York City, which her parents are not going to be okay with.
Ella's parents are not okay with.
So they come up with this scheme to lie, but then, like, they just ultimately ask.
Right, and they get it.
And they get it.
They very conveniently...
Because
Ella's parents
are going to be in New York City, and they're going to be at a hotel that night, and they're like, well, listen, guys, we'll go in, my mom will drive us to the train, we'll be on the train by ourselves, we'll go to the concert, and we'll go to the hotel afterwards, so we'll really not be unsupervised at all.
Right.
And they're like, oh, well, that's fine then.
Right, and it's so bizarre. Ella's parents are, like, immediately like, oh, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's like
they say, why didn't you ask?
And she says, I didn't know I could, which I was like, how?
What a depressing life.
I know.
Ella.
We're gonna get to that.
Never had a fella.
She never had a fella.
But they do have to further lie because Lola feels they need to steal a dress
from Eliza Rocks.
From Eliza Rocks.
So that she can look good at the party.
Yeah.
Right. It's her Eliza dress. The big Eliza doodle dress, as we all know.
She doesn't tell Ella, who has a panic attack about anything to do with deceits, that she's stealing this dress.
Right.
So she summons her, like, golem love interest.
She snaps her fingers and Sam appears from his alternate dimension
to
steal the dress. Throws it in the front of his car and says, look, I got your dress
that
for you.
Tacky.
In the hood of his car,
dress.
Which we're not able to determine if the engine is there or not.
Yeah, he might have thrown it under the engine.
We're
a little unclear. So they get on the train.
Yeah, well, what is important is also that they fail to get tickets.
Well, because they were sold out.
They have a bunch of money and they plan on getting scalps tickets. They get on the train, they have a madcap, like, let's get ready for the fucking
dress and montage.
Right,
yeah. And they get
there. They both look terrible.
Immediately lose all of their money.
Right.
Because that's how the train goes. Yeah. So they can't get tickets. So they half-assedly try to sneak into the concert amidst a crowd.
That fails.
Yes.
Ella gets in,
but she has a panic attack. Lola tries to sneak in. The bouncer kicks them both out. Yeah.
Yeah. So they try to go to the after party afterwards, where they try to, like, walk to Soho.
Also fails.
Without knowing where he actually lives.
Yeah. She has a picture of the
door. Of a
door,
yeah.
Picture of a door.
As they're going there, though, also, there's a mysterious figure who's following them.
There's a mysterious
shaggy dog. A bit of a shaggy dog tail, if you will.
Oh, my God. And then it turns out to be Lola's dad.
Yes.
Yeah, who is illicitly watching them.
Like a creep.
Yes,
like a 1940s gumshoe with a trench coat and, like, a fedora.
Yeah.
Following them very closely.
And shadow kind of, like, looms forward.
She, like, goes to sort of discreetly talk to her dad. Doesn't tell Ella that it was her dad.
Right. Just says, like, I'm going to deal with this problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they arrive at the party. Clearly they can't get in because they're all on the guest list.
Again, Lola tries, like, four different lies. They all fail.
Yep.
Then they see Stu Wolf fighting with one of his bandmates. They both appear to be drunk.
Yep.
Stu stumbles off into an alleyway and collapses literally into piles
of
garbage.
Buried in trash within seconds.
Yep.
They have to pull five trash bags off.
They pull him up. They take him to a diner to try to sober him up.
He throws a donut at a cop.
He throws a donut at a cop.
They get arrested.
They get arrested.
All three of them. Lola has to give her address to the police officer.
She gives the dad's address, and Ella is like, why would you give a false address?
Right.
And then the
Your dad is dead. Why would you lie?
That Lola lied about
why
her dad
indeed?
Being dead.
Because she wanted to appear more interesting.
As she says.
Yes.
Never apologizes. She just explains.
So her dad comes... They get released. They want to go to the party. Ella is very upset.
There's a cursory apology scene.
Lola says, look, I'm sorry.
Forgive me.
And Ella's like, okay. And they go to the party.
They see Carla, so they're able to, like, hey, Carla.
Look at us, Carla. We're here.
So they have that moment.
Right.
And then
Lola also has a moment with Stu Wolf.
Lola gets
where
to,
she calls,
like,
him a drunk.
Confront Stu and try to ask him about his poetic genius. Realizes that he's just a fucking alcoholic.
Right.
And
says, I'll never be able to discuss your poetry with you, Mr. Wolf. And he says, why? Because
you're a drunk.
Yeah.
And it stings. You can see the hurt in his
eyes. Adam Garcia acting the pants off.
Such a his shiny, tight pants off.
His shiny,
tight pants.
Silver lame.
Crochet tank top. Anyway, that's how that party scene ends.
They
both get home. They deal with their little grounding punishment from that.
Yes.
However, the next day when they try to be like, hey, Carla.
Remember how we saw you at that party?
Remember when we saw you at the party? And then Carla... Because there's guys, picture didn't happen.
Carla rightfully has seen through many of Lola's lies.
Right.
Yep.
And understandably plays what she did see into a lie.
Right.
Like,
well, like
you were at the party. I was.
In a very, like, Game of Thrones sort of thing. She sees her weak point and decides to stab at her.
Yeah.
Lola is agitated enough to say, like, my dad was there. My dad's going to meet Stu Wolf. And she says, you said your dad was dead.
Which really
that's
just
when it all
takes her out.
Yes, and it all just, her life crumbles like cornbread.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, while they're rehearsing, Lola stops the entire rehearsal to say, Miss Bigoli, instead, did we cover her? Carol Kane?
Yeah.
Carol Kane is the drama teacher.
Yes, Miss Bigoli. She says, I wanted to apologize for taking the dress to Stu Wolf's party. Because she's clearly less interested in apologizing than she is about telling everyone
it was her
party.
Last gasp at trying to look like she was actually at this party.
Yes.
Ella has already come to the realization that it doesn't matter.
Because we went to the party,
because
so who cares what this awful person thinks?
She says that several times where she's like, I don't care what these people think. And
right.
I was like, good for you, Ella.
Yes. And so Carla, like, makes fun of her, like, says, like, the ridiculous things she's saying, like, what a stupid thing you're saying, and everyone laughs at her.
Have
Ms.
you had
Bigoli,
enough yet, Lola?
Yes. Miss Bigoli laughs at her. So Lola goes home, she's very sad, she's lying in bed, she's too sick to come to the opening night of the musical.
Ella comes in to chew her out, which I'm sure is a moment she has been fantasizing about for that entire school year.
But she basically says, the one thing that Carla Santini can't take from you is the part of Eliza, unless you give it to her.
Right.
And that is what ultimately spurs Eliza or Lola
to get
to
out
go
of bed.
Back
yes.
and get, like, actually do the play.
Yeah. Right.
Which and she does in, like, this in, like, a whirlwind final 10 minutes.
Right. So what I'm going to say is this is the point where I'm going to pause and we were going to play the entirety of that scene.
God's no rights right now what I'm saying. Those are my poisonous words.
Living just enough, just enough for the city.
This girl, she works in downtown New York City, surrounded by four walls that ain't so pretty. Her parents give her love and affection to keep her strong, moving in the right direction.
Now say New York.
New York.
New York. With an R.
New York.
You can't talk. Let's see if you can walk. Ugh.
So I turn myself to face me. Though I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. Well, I'm much too fast to take that test. Turn and face the strain. Just gonna have to be a different girl. Time may change me, but I can't trace time.
They all accepted her because of me.
All because of you? I was there too! I worked hard to make you look good!
Well, what will you do now, dear?
I will be a teacher, because being a teacher is the most worthy thing a person can be.
Thank you.
make it anything you want. Don't have to stick to any rules. You don't need a high IQ to succeed in what you do. You just gotta have no doubt. Just believe in yourself. That girl was a wild child dreamer, but she'll find herself. 'Cause she believes in nothing else. Then you'll look back and you won't believe that girl was me.
And it happened.
Oh, so, guys, that was crazy.
The musical. Everyone's raving about it. 5 stars, says the Delwood Post-Gazette. I smiled and nodded a lot, says Lola's mom. Lawsuit pending, says the estate of David Bowie. And it is phenomenal. She was a one-time teenage drama queen, but now she found herself and did a spoken word part. And
which didn't rhyme.
It also, also that...
you don't need a high IQ to succeed in what you do.
Yep.
Find that scene on YouTube.
The final 5 minutes to resolve this movie is they go to the after party at Carla's fancy mansion.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
A cleaned up, sober Stu Wolf shows up.
With a new Brady Bunch haircut.
And yes. Arrives with Lola's necklace.
Which she left there,
the party,
yes.
And is like, Lola, because you called me a drunk, I went to rehab again. So they have a dance, which is like a romantic little like last dance.
After he like drapes the necklace
across
her from behind.
It's like a Cinderella, like he puts the necklace on her and they dance. And then it immediately cuts to like, and then I realized that I like Sam and I started dating him.
And Sam's my boyfriend now anyway.
End of movie.
Well, also in Miss Bigoli dances with Stu Wolf, which is the pairing that frankly I think we all wanted to see at the end of this movie.
That's the B romantic couple.
That's right. They're the
second.
You have
couple.
The romance couple and the comedy couple, and they're the comedy couple. And frankly, like they're the MVPs of the movie. They should be together.
Yeah.
I feel like we spent more time on this than we do on Southland Tales.
I don't care.
Guys, there's not much to this movie.
Right. Yeah, as I said, this movie is kind of nothing. This is a nothing movie.
Can we talk about one thing
for
some amount of time?
Yeah.
What?
The outfits.
Yes. I have the list. Do you want me to read the list?
Oh.
I remember most of them.
Well, because we
Put it down and we can read, but like...
So maybe this is actually something that we can stack up on the website, maybe, if we can screen cap some of this.
But
as the movie went on, Lindsay Lohan trots out in any number of really ridiculously bad outfits.
Everyone else in this movie dresses like a normal person.
Yes.
But
like, Lindsay Lohan's wardrobe is fucking insane. So, the first one the very first one, her first day at the new high school, she has this, like, bizarre...
disco scarf.
70s headscarf thing, which is, like, cancer patient chic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like beaded.
Yeah, it's like a beaded headscarf. It's very drapey. Her shirt is very drapey to match it.
Mm-hmm. It's like this, like...
It's
like
also nude colored.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's like a peach tone, and it's a little shimmery.
Yeah.
Her audition for Pygmalion, which she, like, was told, by the way, that it was a modern edit.
Right, but she still shows up in a vaguely flower girl. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a Victorian, it's like a multicolored stripe. It's like taupe and black stripe.
Yes.
There's a black stripe vest and a taupe stripe, like, undergarment dress.
What did we call that?
Oh, we've got a lot.
There's a lot of them.
Gear punk madam.
Victorian pirates.
Tim Burton Valentine.
Yeah. Orphan governess.
Victorian pilot is what I
She has to. A cameo choker as well.
And you can see it. I noticed this. You can see it peeling off the like band of velvet they put around her neck. It's bad.
It's really bad. It looks very thin, dude. Because again, that's why the orphan thing. Because it looks like rags that she put on.
What else was there?
Well, so later.
Match girl chic.
Right. So later, a little bit later on in the movie, she and Carla Santina are playing Dee Dee Arndt. And her outfit, I wrote down Honey Nut M&M or Iggy D minus Azalea.
Iggy D minus Azalea.
It's insane. She's wearing, I think...
Thug Life Privilege.
But it's like...
It's reds.
But they're all... It's Nick's stuff, I think. There's like a hat turned a certain way and like...
Well, it's almost like a do-rag.
Yeah.
But not quite.
Right.
And then it's like a weird...
She's got a jersey. It's like a half jersey.
But it was like stitched together out of
she has a big number 8 that's like not...
Flopping off.
Yeah, it's flopping off of the half.
That's what I mean. It was like corduroy. It was really weird.
Yeah.
Or felt.
Yeah.
It looks like felt.
Yeah.
Like a felt number 8. Miss Hot Magandhi.
Miss Hot Magandhi.
She showed up in for one scene where she was meditating.
She was doing non-violence.
She was doing non-violent protest.
Right.
She had like a you call it a glam bindi.
Yeah, she's wearing a glam bindi. She has her hair pulled back and she's wearing the specs and all white. And I was
disgusting.
She
literally had like the circle specs.
Yes.
She's horrible.
It was insane.
Later on, when she is at breakfast moping, she has a look that was either called Desperate Housefly or Medium Edie.
It was like the curl, the blonde curl poking out of the headscarf.
With the sunglasses.
Yes, big sunglasses.
The cardigan.
Yes.
Oh,
like a very, like, a very, like, housewife.
Yes.
Angel Dust Bunny.
Yes. It was like, yeah.
Was that
what
the,
it makes that look like the fembot?
Right, right,
right. Right, that was
right,
sort
because
of
because she had a weird coat on. It yeah. looked like it was a 60s go-go fembot like costume, but she also had like a transparent coat with fur going around
with
the
fur
the
trim
tram.
On the
yeah.
bottom, the
and
hem,
on the
and the sleeves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she did have, I liked the makeup for that look, and I thought she had very nice, as Brendan pointed out, Nancy Sinatra hair.
Right.
Like
yeah.
that.
And the only other one I have is her dress, which we called Eliza Don't Little.
Well, I had the when she does the encore number for the actual Drama Queen song.
Yes.
It was like this white Bollywood princess look where she has mm-hmm. like this sort of like pink like
top.
Yeah, vaguely yeah. it is like pants
and
a top.
It's sort of
but it has like the sort of scarf that makes it look more like a Bollywood getup.
Mm-hmm.
And she has like half dreads, like half white dreads in her hair, and like whatever 90s getup made like pink streaks in your hair.
So I think it's probably very easy to note that one of the big problems in this movie, there's a lot of aesthetics and visual that are very bizarre, one of which being a wardrobe.
Yes, I got really hung up on wardrobe, hair, and makeup. Megan Fox's hair looks greasy and flat and unwashed throughout the entire movie. And here's the thing, everyone looks like shit in this movie. No one looks great. And I don't need people in a high school movie to look glam. I just want their hair to look clean. I want them to look like they maybe, like, take a shower. And, as I think Brendan was stabbing at, there's very bizarre animated sequences in this.
Well, yeah, I mean, if we're going into that now, the entire direction of this movie, like, it's the director, her name is Sarah Sugarman. She has not done much of anything else, go figure. It's very, like, it feels like cut-rate Baz Luhrmann. Like, she saw Moulin Rouge and was like, oh, I can do this too. And so there are a lot of scenes with bizarre fantasies. Sometimes the film gets sped up. There's people, like, yeah. running around very quickly. Like, it looks just really, I don't know how else to describe it except secondary Baz Luhrmann.
I think there's too many different levels of
reality.
Cartoonism.
Yeah.
Because, like, sometimes it's just sped up animation.
Right.
Sometimes it's just sped up. Sometimes, like, when she's talking about the
dead
fake
dad.
Story of her dad dying.
That's flat out cartoon. There's
right.
an actual cartoon.
There is
figure.
A little cartoon person. There are real people, and then there is a cartoon person.
Standing
one
next to them.
Cartoon person.
Yeah.
And it doesn't
them.
Come back. There
and there's,
no
like, a cartoony
people.
Joke where, like, he crashes into a pizza sign that says,
right.
like, 101 pizza toppings, and then he crashes into it, and the number goes up to 102 pizza
right.
toppings.
Yeah, because he died, because
now
he is on
yeah.
a pizza.
There was that. There was when she's fantasizing about dancing with Stu Wolf in that first thing,
she
and
turns
she,
into, like,
well,
a Marilyn
she's in the Marilyn Monroe
yeah.
getup, but then everyone else, and Stu Wolf is there, but then everything else, it looks like paper dolls.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like the paper dolls that she had with Ella earlier.
And then there's
right.
even, like,
yeah.
a much lower, closer to reality level, where, like, when they're all trying to find out who got the part of mm-hmm. Eliza, they run down this hallway which invokes all of the, like, madcap chase tropes.
Right, but it's also, like,
none of
like,
fun.
But it's, like, a very ineptly handled one, because, like, it's, like, she turns over a garbage can, and it spills, like, some pieces of paper
yep.
on the floor. Like, it's not like it's, like, a mess.
Yeah,
but they act
like,
whoa!
Yeah. She takes, like, some VHS tapes.
Right, she throws some VHS tapes on the floor, and everyone trips over the 6 or 7 VHS
yeah.
tapes that are in the
then
hallway.
Then there's
floor.
A hallway with, like,
a ladder
no
being
less
carried.
Than 10 wet floor signs.
Yes. And they start slipping. It's like
yeah.
it's like they're like sliding down it, like oh, like a fucking slip and slide.
It's like a 10-foot square land of space with 10.
Right. It's like it's the most. It's like it's so ridiculous. Like we were saying, like it's you just expect like to see like two guys carrying like a pane of like glass wander by, like
there
a guy with a fruit cart
yeah.
being like fresh grapes for sale.
There
and
is
it,
those two guys carrying a ladder.
Yeah.
And they all like slip.
Yeah.
Under.
They like comically slip under the
yeah.
ladder, and then it ends with them running into a door that actually does open.
Right, they slam into
they
it, then they go through another door, and then
right.
one of Megan Fox's minions just opens the door, and
right.
I was like,
yeah.
what the
she
fuck?
Manages to she reaches up and unlocks it, because everyone else just, like, crashes
she
into it.
She actually had a good moment where she was like, ugh.
It's also, it's weird, to, so the movie also opens with a fantasy sequence, where we see it's
like a,
Lola
yeah, it's like
wearing
a
her sort of, like, yeah, Breakfast at Tiffany's attire as her mother and the twins are leaving,
everyone's
saying, like,
wearing,
we'll miss you
yeah.
in New York. You know, you're sure you're going to be okay by yourself living in New York all alone? And she's like, oh, sure I am, Mumsy. Like, ta-ta.
Yeah.
And they drive away. And then we realize, oh, no, this is just her pop-up funnies that she's been reading.
Pop-up funnies.
That
yes.
doesn't come back.
No, there's a weird scene where we realize that this is a pop-up book, which almost leads you to believe that there should be some sort of motif
but
with a pop-up book.
Nope.
Maybe she likes to make pop-up funnies, but she doesn't. Like, it just never comes back ever again.
Funnies. They sort of do stab at that, I guess, with all, like, the paper doll shit, but none of it is consistent enough to pay off as a motif.
Well, it's just, it's weird. It's like, there are things, there are items in this, like, real items in the world that come into her fantasies. Like,
right.
How, like, the paper dolls show up in one fantasy, and her other fantasy kind of looks like a pop-up book. Like, it's almost supposed to be, like, I think she is taking these bizarre things from her life and using them, like, as her fantasy.
Right.
But it's, like, just a little to make you notice it after the fact, but not enough to make you realize that
well,
this is a thing.
There was one example of that I think they did a good job with, which is in all of those fantasy sequences when she's some other, like, Marilyn Monroe or the Breakfast at Tiffany's thing, that necklace with the bottle, it's, like, three Coke bottle caps joined by like a chain or something.
Yeah.
Comes back as like
practically an antique.
But it comes back as like pearls with like three little, I don't know, brooches. That scene in the very beginning where she's Audrey Hepburn. Those are pearls. That's
really?
A pearl necklace.
Oh, there's a scene where she's dancing with Stu Wolf for the first time.
Right.
Where he puts on a necklace. Because this is where I realized that she's actually a prophetic character.
Uh-huh.
Because she daydreams that she's going to meet Stu Wolf and dance with him. And
he's going to put a necklace on
He puts on the necklace, which is like the Coke bottle necklace, but it just looks fancier.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end of the movie, he actually has her necklace.
Right.
Like,
yes.
Puts it on her.
And then dances with
yes.
her.
Yes. And so later we find out, I'm sure, that all of her daydreams are coming true. And that she is responsible for the death of her father.
Yeah.
Crashing into a pizza truck because as a cartoon character looks on.
Because he had too many white roses in front of him on his motorcycle.
Yes.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And they appear on
right. Well, she says, like, he was coming with white roses. Then she's like, two dozen white roses. And it's just like so many more pop in front of his face. He's struggling to, like, look around.
Yeah,
him.
he's like, oh, no.
Uh-oh, where'd the white roses come from?
Here's the thing, though. It almost looks shittier for the fact that didn't happen more in the movie. If that was more of a running thing, I think
right.
it would have
been
okay.
I
would have
been okay if that was the tone.
Yeah,
the
no, like, if there was some sort of, like, magic realism thing in this movie, that
I'm
would
in.
Be okay.
Yeah,
I'd be
it doesn't
completely,
happen often enough.
No, like,
it sinks
it's
back down
super
to, like,
jarring
reality.
When it does happen. So
there's even a moment where she goes into the New Jersey and there's like a fruit sign that says abandon all hope.
Right.
Which is
yeah.
great.
Yeah, it's fun. Like there are some fun moments like that, and those are I think the moments of comedy that actually work.
And
in
that
the movie.
Is like that would make sense to me because this is like what I was saying is like the lens it's a movie that's shot through the lens of an overdramatic teenager. Where
yes.
like this is what the world looks like. It looks like
right.
the world is black and white and deadwood.
Right.
There's nothing here for
right.
you. But, like, it's not like that at all. It
no,
just bounces
and
back
frankly,
and
like, that would be kind of fun. Like, if she gets to the school and everyone's yeah. wearing, like, very bland, like, pastel outfits, and she's the only one wearing this ridiculous thing,
mm.
and, like, you know, it's just, it's a very dull, boring place. But, like, no, it's a school. Like,
I think
kids
maybe
are dressed
the
like
director, it's not outside the realm of possibility that she was going for that, but, like, just failed utterly.
I think there were very clear steps she could have taken to see that vision out.
Oh, for
yeah.
sure.
That she just didn't take, which I find weird.
What
right.
we're left with, what we look at, is just a mess of...
It's a mess.
Yeah, it's a mess of vision, basically.
Okay, so, going off of your point about this is supposed to be through the eyes of an overdramatic teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't get that on another level, which is, I think we're supposed to find this perspective to be, like, fun. And, like, this personality
well,
of hers is, like, it's she's irrepressible and, you know, she's maybe goes a little too far sometimes, but you gotta love her. You don't. She's just a stone-cold
so
asshole
like,
in this movie.
The reviews of the book are positive.
Right.
And the book is, by the way,
so
very
you,
similar.
You guys,
yeah,
you guys
Lee,
read the
right.
book.
Well, Lee read, like, the back
I
half.
Skimmed, yeah, I skimmed and I read from the back. To the
right.
Front.
I read the whole book because
wow.
I am committed, dear listener. And, yes, I thought, like, perhaps, like, maybe the book is very different. Like, maybe the book has a tone that works. No, the book, honestly...
She's even worse.
Yeah, because it's entirely, like, her inner monologue is running throughout.
Yeah, her
so,
narcissism and self-centered worldview is just...
Right, like, there are legitimate points in the book where she, like, talks about, like, how much everyone hates Carla Santini, and they all hate her. That, like, I seriously thought that maybe she was delusional in the book, and she's, like, hallucinating about, like, everyone hates Carla. They all hate you, Carla. They all hate you. The only real differences, just to cover real quick in the book, is...
Mm-hmm.
The movie ends with the whole scene at the after party. The book has none of that. The book ends as the musical ends. There's a brief sort of reconciliation between Megan Fox and Lindsay Lohan's characters where they sort of like have like a moment of
it's
understanding.
Sort of a, more of a detente.
Yeah, yeah, right. They're just sort of like we could probably do things
but
together.
We won't.
But
probably
we won't.
Won't.
Yeah. And so they just sort of like part ways, perhaps
yeah.
understanding each other a little bit better. And there's no scene where Stu Wolf comes to her. There's no scene where, like, she is proven right in front of the entire student body,
yeah.
which honestly works a lot better for me because that puts so
yeah.
much more emphasis on Ella's point of, like, it doesn't matter that no one believes you that you saw Stu Wolf. What matters is that we did.
Yeah.
Going a little further than that, she's such an asshole that it's reprehensible that the movie goes to...
Dance break!
Woo!
Reggaeton break. What I fucking tell you.
It doesn't sound like what you were singing earlier. What I find is really bad is that Lindsay Lohan is such a dick... But the movie rushes to validate her and
mm-hmm.
to make sure everyone knows that she's the best.
Right.
Because yeah. she spends that entire movie lying to everyone, pretty much, creating her own problems, weaving this poor, shy girl who, you know, say what you want, she could be a drip or not, whatever, into these completely insane, unnecessary capers. And digs her own hole in the, at the end of the movie. They're like, yeah, but she saved this guy from alcoholism. All the important things she said were true. You gotta love her anyway. No, I don't. She's a monster.
I think, you know, no one is really likable in this yeah. movie. But what I will say is she's the same character in the book. And mm-hmm. people reviewed the book positively, saying yeah. Lola's perspective was, like, refreshing and yeah. witty. Which, like, did huh. we read the same book? Like, because, no, she's just a self...
No,
my
she's
opinion
the same.
Of
yeah.
the writer and of, like, the what, you know, whoever was responsible for adapting into a screenplay is that... Mm. They are not someone who understands teens, and they inherently dislike them.
Yeah.
And feel that they have no real, like, perspective. Because, like, this is clearly written from someone who thinks that, like, this is all teens care about, and that they're not capable of depth of thought or emotion.
I think it becomes more evident in the movie, when the movie looks like all the teen parties yeah. are, like, a 40-year-old person being like, this is what teens like.
Yeah, teens play 8-directional DDR.
Yeah, like,
That was the weirdest for me, where it did feel like they were just sitting there and, like, well, what's cool? What do cool kids do?
Right.
The age, alleged age of the screenwriter or author even shows, when they're talking about doing Eliza Rocks, the teacher goes, contemporary songs, when the play actually goes, and it's Living in the City and Changes, which I'm like, I mean, fine, but those aren't contemporary.
No, I will allow that because it's Miss Bagoli, and I can yeah. imagine that she is like a 50-plus-year-old woman, she would be like, this is cool contemporary music yeah. that the kids love.
She needed to get something from the drama room. She's a David Bowie.
Yeah. Oh, yes, she is. That was...
something she needs in the drama
Lola,
room.
Lola, there's just something I need from the drama room. She goes there, like, twice.
She has this line
something.
About it, and it's very clearly... the clear implication is that she needs some drugs. She stashed some right. drugs.
I actually thought some of the bits with her were legitimately funny.
Well, again, it's Carol Kane. Like, Carol Kane is quality. Like, even in a garbage movie like this, I think Miss Bagoli is a funny character because Carol Kane is a very funny woman.
It's
like,
true.
Like, when she's doing, like, a breathing exercise, she starts going, shake, 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 and she starts, like, twitching, like, on the stage.
I thought she was
going to
fall backwards.
Me too. And I actually had, like a real tension where I was like...
we all held our breaths and gasped.
Is she going to
break... Miss Bagoli!
Well, but I was going to say, also, there was
what
a bit
say,
of...
what do you say, break a leg? Literally.
There was one moment of writing that I thought was good for her character. When you see her mouth along with Lindsay Lohan's line in the play where she's like, I'm going to become a teacher. The best thing
yeah.
you can be.
Preachy.
I thought it was really funny.
Anyhow,
that's
I want to go
Trump
back
said.
Because you keep sort of pushing away from this. But like,
what?
The one, because we were talking about likability of characters.
Oh, yeah.
So a big problem really is, like we've said, Lola is a liar throughout the entire mm-hmm. movie. A big problem is that Lola never seems to realize that this is a bad thing.
No.
Ella is upset when they get to the party and says, I don't want to go to this party. And Lola basically says, oh, come on. Like, let's go to the party. Let's put this aside. And Ella says, you're just trying to save the night. And Lola's like, no, I'm not. And Ella's like, okay, fine. And frankly, like, I get Ella because, frankly, I'd probably want to go to the party too.
Yeah.
But, like, my point is also that, like, so she lies. She goes in the next day and she says, hey, Megan Fox, did you see us at the party? And Megan Fox is like, no, I didn't. And Lindsay Lohan's like, she's lying! Like, such betrayal! Yeah. How could she?
I'm telling you, Lola and Trump, textbook narcissism. Yes. Like, it's like, no one needs a psych degree to look at these people and be like, that's narcissism.
Right. And then, like, Lola never really apologizes. She never learns anything. She never says, like, oh, like, I found out that, like, I am, like, I'm an interesting person all by myself. I don't need to tell lies to people for this.
It's what sociopaths do.
Yes.
They learn educationally. They understand, like, know that they're wrong.
But
they don't
well, this is,
understand
this is, this is how
right.
people have reacted to this.
Yes. Yeah.
But I don't get why,
I don't get why I should react.
Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. This is legitimately
people have
sociopath.
A problem when I lie. I don't think it's a big deal, but I guess I should act sorry.
Yeah, I need to appear contrite in order to, like, progress socially throughout the
what
situation.
What's even crazier about that situation is, so you kind of see Ella be a doormat about this. She does get some good lines in throughout the movie being like, no, that was crazy. Why are you doing this? Or like when they have the thing with Megan Fox and she's like, it doesn't matter. At the very end, Ella's like last bits of dialogue are chewing into Lola as she's just like laying in her bed. And she gives this speech. I was honestly like, yeah, that's deserved. And Lola even reaches out to try to be like, no, don't hurt me like that. And she's like, don't touch me. And I was like, yes, commit to this. But then she rolls over in 2 seconds mm-hmm. and it's like, okay, we're friends now.
Well,
like,
no, the other thing that bugs me though is she gives the speech saying like, I can't believe like this bullshit you're doing.
Yeah.
And then she starts to cry. It's like, and you taught me to believe in myself. No.
Yeah.
No, she didn't.
No.
She taught you, like, you learned that you are a better person, but like, she taught you nothing, Ella
Gerard. You learned about the deceptive hearts of other people.
Right. Like,
what I will allow, right, is that sometimes, like, madcap people, because you have to put up with them,
right,
will, like, teach you lessons.
No, and that's...
I don't get
but
this
it's not that,
that,
like,
though.
You... It's not that, like, they taught you a lesson. It's like, you had to learn
Yes,
this
you
lesson.
Learned this lesson by default because you
because
are with this
you
person.
Were thrust into
okay,
this
in my
person.
Okay, in my read of this movie, and I feel like this is maybe similar to what you guys were seeing, Ella's lesson is, like, I need to stay away from assholes like that. And this was an entire situation I could have done without.
I don't
without.
Know that it was that. I don't know that she learned that lesson.
No, no, I said...
Because she still wants to be
If I was in that situation, that's the lesson I'm taking away.
I think what Ella learned is like, oh shit, we are stranded in New York City. I learned how to deal with some of these situations.
Yeah, is that I think Ella should come out and realize that, like, no, like, I'm a strong person. Like,
and,
I can
like,
do shit.
I lied to my parents and I got in trouble and the world didn't end.
Right.
Yeah. That happens.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
I can do this
she learned these things, like, because of Lola's actions, not because of anything Lola taught her.
Right, there was nothing innate about Lola that was great about it. I will say that, and I had a lot of sympathy for poor Ella throughout this movie. I felt like she was just sort of a ragdoll being dragged around. I did roll my eyes when she was like, but I can't lie to my parents. But a part of me did understand that because in high school I was that person.
You're a real drip.
I was!
I think that
in
Ella
high school I was a massive drip.
Deepest with you than all three of us.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I do think that she rolled over a lot, but
I
was
like,
just sort of like, get out of this situation, Ella. Go live a better
to me,
life.
I don't sympathize with Ella in this movie because, like, she's so boring in this movie. Like, in this world of, like, people that I hate, she's just, like, not...
Yeah.
Enough of a spectrum, and do you know what I mean? She's
yeah.
too she falls too in the middle for me to like even care.
Right. Again, I think if Ella, I think really like Ella should have come out like a stronger person by the end of this movie, like a more assertive person.
But the movie
but she doesn't.
Well, the movie can't have that because
right.
we're supposed to be laying our accolades at Lola's feet,
right.
for just existing.
Yeah. The minor character of Sam, I kind of wanted to talk about real quick too. So like the interesting thing about Sam in the book.
Do you think we can summon him if we all clap our hands?
Yes,
Sam.
I need a dress. Fetch my dress, Sam.
Here you go.
Thank you, Sam. So Sam in the books is this sort of like weird, like punky kind of kid with dreadlocks and pierced ears.
Wow.
And his entire motivation in the book seems to be he also hates Carla. Ergo, he's hanging around with Lola because she annoys Carla the most. And so there's no real hint of romance aside from the fact that he's like the only other male who comes near her in this novel aside from Stu Wolf.
In the movie, he is some kind of thrall.
Yes. In the movie...
instantly enchanted.
I will say, in the movie, he has even less personality than what you've described.
Well, see, the thing is, like, he's a very, like norm-core character in the movie, because he's just, like, he's this normal, unoffensive-looking, like, baby Robert Downey Jr. type.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're also, sidebar, the best scene in this movie... not the best scene, because that's Eliza Rocks. Wherever... Ella first summons Sam from the ether to appear to Lola, and as Sam walks away at the end, there's a shot of Lola looking, and then there's a shot of Sam's flat ass in some early 2000s jeans, which is the female
like
gaze
looking.
Has finally happened.
It's like looking at a brick wall.
Yeah, there's like nothing.
There's nothing happening.
No. Okay, not only was there nothing there, I felt weird watching this as an adult and being invited by this movie to ogle, at most, a 17-year-old's ass.
Right, so like, let's also, so like, again, like, it's, I'm thinking of something like maybe like High School Musical, where it's like, oh, Zac Efron a cutie, like look how cute he is, but there's not a shot of like his butt as he leaves the room.
But
like that is weird.
What I the one highlight, the one good thing about this movie in my eyes is that the men have no power.
Yes,
that the Sam shows up for like a couple scenes and does entirely what the woman tells him.
Right, he has no like agenda of his own.
None. The dad is like an asexual. Like he might as well not have like he's there to like observe.
You love
and
that
rescue.
Dad.
I would date that dad.
Yeah.
That I would like to date, not fuck.
You and Negus.
Yeah.
Negus
the shaggy dog.
Negus the shaggy dog, which sounds so dirty.
Oh, terrible name.
The terrible dog name. And Stu Wolf, who is, like, basically saved, literally saved from the gutter. By
he's kind of like a drunk baby, basically.
Yeah.
He's like a child. He's like a childlike mentality. He's very endearing, despite the fact that, like, you're a drunk.
These are the three male characters, and they have maybe 30% of the total screen time.
Yeah. They are nothing.
Yeah.
They are, like, cobblestones under
the
feet
of
these women.
You point something out that I didn't realize when I watched the first time around, which was, for someone who's supposed to be in the bottom of the social totem pole, Ella is kind of in control of things.
Ella just commands Sam from nothing.
Right.
Sam,
and
come over here.
Yeah.
Does.
Yeah.
Well,
and
but
also,
she also
like,
seems to,
they show scenes of her interacting with, like, a few students, and she, like, she's holding a clipboard. I don't know. Is she, like, getting into, like a petition or something? Like, I really don't know.
I think she's been a class rep.
Oh, that's true.
Right.
I mean, and she also seems to be doing, like, some sort of stagehand work for Eliza Rock, so maybe she's signing people.
But if you read the sequel to the book, she has to have been a class rep to run for vice, the vice president of the student council, which is why Lola wants to beat Carla, but she can't run because she has mid-class rep, so she makes Ella run for class rep. Therefore, what I think we were seeing in Confessions is her being class
rep. It's the beginning of the Confessions cinematic universe.
Yeah. But it was also like, it wasn't like she was standing there like being a martinet and like writing. It was like she was smiling and laughing, and it was just like, you have other friends.
Yeah.
What you don't see in this movie, again, you don't really see like clicks. You see like Carla and her two other bitch friends.
Yeah.
And you see...
You see some
Ella
drama kids who show up at rehearsal, but like you don't get a sense of them.
My favorite character.
Yeah, and someone who's clearly the director's nephew because he is framed very obviously at the end of the movie.
He's in other scenes.
Well, he's Pickering. He's
just
Pickering.
Sort of like smiles and likes.
Yeah.
He's always behind other characters.
Sorry, visual gags on a
focus.
Yeah.
He's in focus behind someone else, just like gaping at Stu Wolf.
You kind of touched on this briefly, but like the idea of high school in this movie, like high school as a concept in this movie, it's bizarrely handled, right? Like, it hasn't... It neither
there's
has...
There's no... Like I said, there's not a lot of social pressure.
Right.
It's like, the general idea that they want... That she wants to, like, be... she wants to get attention, but there's, like, only five characters
right.
in this high
school. It seems to be that, like, there's Carla and her friends, and the rest of the school does not care about anything happening.
Yeah.
Like, literally, like, this universe is just Carla... And Lola and like their peripheral friends.
Yeah.
Like
there's
nothing
no,
else matters.
That was one of the other like narratives I was imagining, because I was very bored by this movie while I was watching it. But I just sort of imagined this narrative in which it's really just like the five of them going at each other, while the rest of the school is just going on, like not noticing.
Because,
just
like, in other high school movies, like the person that wants to be the lead is not necessarily the queen bitch. Like there could be like nerdy theater kids and like cheerleader is the queen bitch.
Right. I'm just thinking like the scene of Mean Girls wherever they like go through like the cafeteria and show you like all the different like cliques of people.
You don't
like
have that
who
at
are
all.
Like who are these other people in here?
They also in Mean Girls had recurring clique members you would see throughout the movie as kind of like touchstones, which was really clever.
Yeah.
And they weren't fully fleshed out characters, but they were recognizable. You know what their deals
and
were.
And in Clueless, like you know, the characters literally say like, "Don't date that one. He's
right.
a stoner. Those
right.
are the stoner kids
right.
over there. We're the these are the jocks.
And
like,
look,
we are this.
Here's
like,
the thing."
I'm
fine with a high school movie that's not going to go full in on cliques, but this movie tries to invoke clique-like things, like having the head bitch and her posse and yada yada, but we never see that power at play, and if you're going to have that, you need to have the clique universe to show that
the,
fits in.
The bigger problem is just that there's not enough, you need representative characters of groups, and there's only five people, and it's very isolated, as if the world does not exist inside these five characters.
Right. I mean, the movie tries to both forego cliques, but also does not paint anything close to a realistic portrayal of high school.
No.
Like, I think it would be one thing if they were like, we don't want to do jocks and mean girls, but they don't do anything.
If you actually think back to the way that the classroom shots are framed, it's you don't really see any other students.
No, the shots always focus very tightly on
the main
characters.
And the one time that, like, Lola is sort of humiliated publicly, quote-unquote, is, like, in rehearsal with, like, maybe 10 kids.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and they're also framed at the edge of the shot.
Yeah.
Even when it cuts to them, you're
and
getting
you
this
never,
weird...
Yeah.
You never get the sense that, like, the rest of the... You never see shots of her walking down a hallway and everyone else is laughing at her. You never see that.
No,
they wear, like, bland shirts.
Yeah, again, it's just a problem, like, that, like, these people are not noteworthy or shot in a way
to
draw attention
There's
to
a way to have done this movie where that is deliberate.
Yeah.
And that's meant to invoke the sense that she's self-centered and
not in this case.
Or also just the idea that like everyone's a very boring character in this town. But again,
not. The direction is terrible, so it just looks like where are the other kids in this
movie? No, like you literally just don't notice them.
Yeah. Well, and another
it's scenery. There's scenery.
Yeah. Another failure on the kind of the high school movie front is, you know, part of what I think attracts us a lot to high school movies is it kind of blows up these very small things, because in high school everything is very heightened and it's this very insular social world, and this movie is heightened just in none of the ways I want it to be, none of the ways that are satisfying or entertaining. We get this heightened character who's a monster, but everyone else just seems to be putting up with her.
Yeah.
So it's not like there was a heightened situation for us to get pulled into and have fun with. You just see this ridiculous person tromp all over people for 90 minutes. It's not fun. It's not entertaining.
It's a strange progression of plot, too, really. It's weirdly episodic. Like, it follows, like, a gradual ascension.
The first conflict
but it bounces back and forth between, like, the problems that she's having and doesn't really focus too much on one until it really gets to the point where, like, she's at the party and then it's almost like, oh, right, she was lying a lot, too. We should probably focus on this.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's ineptly handled. So, like, I don't know, like, what is Lola's journey in this movie in terms
of
character? Like, does she have one at all?
No, I would say she's mostly static. The furthest it goes is she learns maybe she shouldn't lie so much.
Right. Because she never, again, she never says anything about, like, I realize now this is ridiculous. I'm, like, a strong person and people will like me for who I am. But
yeah,
she just, she never says any of that. She never seems to have any reaction.
The comeuppance isn't even that satisfying. It's, I spent the whole time wanting her to be punished and she's not. The movie celebrates
and her. And again, like, that's kind of why, like, the ending of the book actually does work sort of better. Because, like, she doesn't get that validation at the end. If there's any validation, like, she has to give it to herself. She doesn't get someone to wander in and be like, you weren't lying. Surprise.
However, and when that happened, when Stu came in and was like, here, I'm going to validate everything that's just happened. I literally said out loud to my monitor in my bedroom, fuck you, movie. I was like, that's so stupid.
If it, I don't know if it helps or hurts, but, like, the sequels pretty much to the book demonstrate that she's not evolved as a character.
Yeah, it seems that
way. Because she still continues to manipulate.
So what were they trying to... Were they trying to, like, create, like, a Sweet Valley High situation? Where, I mean, it's just going to be, like, the same...
Well, no, I mean, it's, you have successful books and you make sequels. Yeah, like, I don't think there's anything to it.
So I don't really understand...
There's really nothing to it.
...why the book gained as much traction as it did, but
I don't think
it's authentic. Yeah. And I think that if you take it... with the intent that Lola is a sympathetic character.
You can't.
It's bad. I think it works on a different level, but if we want to get into, like, fixes.
Well, I think the only thing I wanted to talk about again real quickly was just the Eliza Rocks musical, just in a bizarre sense. Because, like, this is, for me, this is the payoff. The whole reason why I know this movie is because when I was a junior in college, Lee, you and I, and two of our friends, Faith and Meg, who was on the Jack the Giant Slayer episode, were living in an apartment in the south end of Boston. And this was over winter break. You guys had gone home before I did. And so I was there for a few days by myself. And so I was getting into the habit of leaving the TV on when I left the apartment just so I could come back to, like, some sort of noise in the background. Yeah, I'm adorable.
No, that's nice.
Yeah, and so the one, I distinctly remember this.
Like a tiny violin for you.
Yeah, thank you. And so I distinctly remember coming back rather late in the day at one point, going downstairs to where the TV was on, and I walked into the living room, and I saw the enormous floating head of George Bernard Shaw swing across the stage in front of Lindsay Lohan as she was singing Changes. And I just stood there staring at the screen, thinking, what is happening right now? And that is when I sought out this movie. So, like, for me, Eliza Rocks is, like, the 4 minutes of pleasure you get for, like, 70 minutes of pain in this movie. It is a bonkers shit show of a musical. I don't know how else to describe it. This musical must be obscenely expensive. I don't know how much it costs to get the performance rights to Living in the City and Changes, but I imagine it's not cheap. These sets are ridiculous. Yeah. These costumes are ridiculous. You have, oh god, you have, like, students who are painted up to look like busts who will wander down
the
staircase.
They're like, it's like Japanese theater because they're wearing black.
Right. It's like no theater. Yeah. And it's just like, they just do, like, this ridiculous, like, shopping cart choreography in the beginning. And it's just like...
Yeah, by the way, shot aerially, which drove me crazy because I'm like, the audience can't see that.
Do you
want
to know, like, the weird thing that, like, I kind of, I don't want to say I liked it, but because, like, I've watched so many, like, musicals from the 1940s, Busby Berkeley, he would do these, like, those ridiculous, like, and they would always shoot them from above, but whenever they would, like, they would show, like, in the movie 42nd Street, they were doing this ostensibly on a stage, and they'll have all these geometric patterns of, like, shots from above, but meanwhile, like, you're sitting on the floor being like, what the hell are they doing? Like, these girls are just lying on their backs flopping around. What is this business?
That was my question. When this happened, I was like, if I'm in watching Eliza Rocks, I'm like, what the fuck?
I don't want to go so far as to say that was, like, an homage to Busby Berkeley, because I don't think it was, but like
a little bit of pleasure.
Right, like it was like, I appreciate, like, how stupid this was then and it's stupid now.
I appreciate and I'll revisit within that scene, the entire Eliza Rocks sequence. As I said before, Megan Fox gives her best performance.
Right, as Mrs. Higgins, his mother.
The layers of acting happening in that scene.
Yeah.
And
Carla with her veiled hatred towards Lola.
Yes, with her old lady wig.
As
what will you do now, dear?
As portrayed by Megan Fox.
Yeah,
is like,
who apparently also hated Lindsay Lohan on the set. They hated each other on set.
Big surprise.
Huge surprise. Yeah. I also felt, by the way, that Megan Fox's performance was terrible overall, and she gave at least one too many facial expressions for every beat.
Every line ends with a head tilt.
Yeah.
Every line ends with a head tilt.
And she, it's like talking to a dog or something. Yeah. You're just like, hey, Megan Fox, how are you doing?
Well, she's like, I'm doing great. Well, the last line always kind of goes down or up in a way that is meant to be sardonic.
But yeah, just she, you could just, I could buy that character in that moment as Mrs. Higgins, just channeling all that distaste. And even in real life, all that distaste.
Which is weird, too, because Mrs. Higgins is actually nice to her. Well, she's, like, helpful, because she's the one, like, well, I mean, because that, like, I don't think also, like, in Pygmalion, My Fair Lady, or at least in My Fair Lady, Mrs. Higgins is not there whenever Eliza throws a fit and storms out. Like, later...
But it's sort of, like, off-screen, isn't it?
Well, she throws a fit, and then later, like, Henry Higgins shows up at his mother's house, and she's like, oh, Eliza's in my parlor. I'm helping her out now. And it's weird that, like...
Because you fucking loved her and left her.
Right.
I'm cleaning up after you, son.
Yes. Other interesting thing about Eliza Rocks, it opens in medias res. It opens with Higgins...
Midline!
Higgins and what's the other guy? Pickering.
Pickering.
Pickering are just standing there writing something down, and Eliza says, hey, you got no right to be writing down what I'm saying. These are my poisonous words. And then they exit. So you, as an audience member, have no idea what's going on. Who are these characters writing this down? Why is she mad at them? And then why is she singing about how she's living in the city?
Yeah. When I watch a musical, I want to know where the character is living.
Yes.
Right up front.
Are you living enough for the city? Is it just enough for the city?
I do kind of like the choral part coming in. They're like, just enough.
I mean, to be fair, like, I think it says a lot about the durability of the song Changes that I still liked the song Changes in the movie. Not because anyone was a good performance, but I also have a thing for, like, fully orchestrated, like, versions of pop songs.
Yeah.
So, like, I liked the version of Changes, even though Lindsay Lohan singing it is making David Bowie spin in his grave as we speak.
Even though the orchestra pit was all Mac.
I was just about to say!
Okay, yeah. Visual gag. Miss Spigoli enters.
That was effective.
Bows. It's the orchestra pit. There are students with MacBooks.
It's not just a visual gag. She says, ladies and gentlemen, press your space bars.
And they press them at various points throughout. They don't just all press at once.
It's as if, like, they have a soundboard.
Right.
You know, like, they're each responsible for one sound on that soundboard. So
right.
It's like, I've got the drums for Changes, so I have to play Changes.
Yes, I have to keep the beat and push the space bar every time
there's several cutaway shots of them, like, doing it to the beat on their thing.
Yeah. I also feel like Miss Spigoli probably should have taken her to task for pronouncing cite so many times. As, like, a drama teacher, she probably should have corrected her singing voice. In the cite. Ugh. So
it's like she was trying to do a little, like, Elvis Costello.
I mean, it's lazy pop. She's just doing what every fucking lazy pop singer does, where they just say, enter a name here, and it's applicable.
Selena Gomez.
Seriously.
I was thinking about Let It Go.
And then it ends with, of course, the encore number of That Girl, right?
It's an encore number, but it's not an encore.
Right, because it's the first time that we have heard
it.
Because, for all we know, there are two songs in this musical version of Eliza Rock.
And her backup dancers are in the craziest blue wigs.
Anime blue wigs.
Right.
And they've got t-shirts that say things like VM. Vroom.
Vroom.
Yeah.
There's
no vowels.
I think I saw POW on someone.
One of them has just a question mark and an exclamation point.
Right. And she
sings... They're like Dr. Seuss characters.
Yeah.
But
yeah, no, they look like clues or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again,
but why?
Like, yeah, why are these characters dressed like
in
this bizarre way?
Like the pink, white Bollywood
princess
outfit.
Belly exposing.
Belly shirt with
like
a scarf and like sort of pink...
Sort of bell bottom.
Right. She has that horrible spoken word interlude.
Is a work of art.
Life is a work of art.
You have to paint it colorful.
I
don't remember the next part, but I do remember you don't need a high IQ to do
to succeed
need.
In what you do.
Which is a terrible message, by the
Which
way.
Is also.
I mean, I guess it's not. Because, like, IQ is gigantic, so we shouldn't really, like.
Yeah.
Telling you that, but like you do need to.
I think
like,
it's phrased poorly.
Study.
Yeah. I think also there is a problem
Kids
with the
learn.
Fact that. There is no rhyme scheme in the spoken word, except when she rhymes IQ and you do together, which would imply that it's a rhyme scheme. I don't claim to know a lot about songwriting, but I have read Stephen Sondheim's Hat books many times, and I can tell you that there is one part from the song, Together Wherever We Go in Gypsy, that he himself says that he feels uncertain about because together and wherever are spoken together as though you might think they should rhyme, but they don't. And it makes me think, hearing this entire spoken word song, it is spoken as though you think it ought to rhyme, and then it doesn't, except once when it does.
It's so weird, too, because they, like, I think it's, like, supposed to be, like, a rap break, but she doesn't rap.
No,
I would also argue
speaks.
That if you do want to be an astronaut, you arguably do need a high IQ
right.
for that. So maybe you should temper your expectations.
That would have been a better, frankly, moral for her at the end of the story.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I mean, does it also shock anyone that Lola isn't coming to the table with the best messages about life?
Yeah.
I mean, you can do some things. Like, you could probably be, like, a pro football player. You probably don't need a high IQ for that. But you probably can't be, like, a neurosurgeon.
Like, Lindsay Lohan should be saying, temper your expectations, be realistic. It's the Monsters University moral all over again.
Yeah.
So, is there anything we liked?
No.
I liked
really.
That sequence because that's my segue. I have nothing to say for looking to score because there's maybe 5 minutes of score in this movie. And
I like.
I was gonna say there's like maybe a handful of stings.
Yeah.
I like that fucking song.
Which one?
That girl.
I like.
That girl was
no.
I can't sing it no matter how many times I hear it.
I get
that girl, blah, 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 blah.
As a woman, do you feel that song sums up your life is in
that girl was you? Was
that girl
was
that girl was you? Me.
Wow.
By the way, the song is like a girl looking back on the selfish person she
right.
was.
Right. No. So it's also, because I was listening to that song earlier today, it doesn't even really fit in with the story of Pygmalion.
Nope.
Like,
no.
It is a song clearly written because, like, they wanted a song.
Yep.
No, like, it's like, I used to think that all this was important and blah, 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 and then
yeah.
I realized, like, that was me.
Right.
When I was a kid. But no, that's not how Lola feels the end of the movie.
Right, and that's
nope.
not how
that's
Eliza Doolittle feels.
Nothing to do with Eliza Doolittle.
Yeah.
No gross.
So it is, again, just a pop song shoehorned in.
Well, actually, we can tally up a few things that we liked.
Yeah.
We liked Carol Kane's performance.
Yeah.
Yep, funny.
Thought she was
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
I liked Stu Wolf.
Yeah, I liked Adam Garcia.
I liked
Stu Wolf.
I liked
too.
Stu
I thought
Wolf.
He has very little screen time, but
he
he's
some,
funny.
He has some real cheeseball drunk acting.
Yeah,
him,
yeah,
which
it's
fun.
It's
yeah.
stupid. Like it's obviously like very like Disney Channel original
yes.
movie drunkenness.
It's like
yes.
what teenagers think being drunk is like.
Right, like where you just sort of like act like a goofball.
Yeah,
so
you
he and his
like,
bandmate.
What is she saying? Like
yeah.
the slurring of
he
words.
He and his bandmate
like,
were dressed in the most like bullshit mod. Like,
I'm about it.
Did you
weird
like that?
Shit. I didn't.
I didn't.
Then why are you talking about it now, Chris?
Oh, hurry. Say what you want about Ella as a character. I think Alison Pill tried.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's probably more to stay with my
like.
I
don't
like
any
Alison
of the
Pill.
Characters, but some people like Ella.
I would also say that it's not, I don't want to say it's a full compliment, but I think in theory the character of Sam is mildly more interesting in the movie than he is in the book. Because
yeah.
in the book there
the
is
book
literally nothing there, and I kind of like the fact that in the movie he's not like this like grungy like punk kid, and he's just like this very like affable sort of guy who is just friends with like these people. Like
yeah.
that is more interesting to me, that he's friends with these girls, and like that's totally cool.
I
so,
think,
piggybacking on that,
speaking, he's probably gay.
Which, okay, hold on. We don't see any other people in the school,
know,
so we don't
true.
Know that.
He's only shown to be... Well, like, there's that one scene where he, like... It really looks like he's desperate to insert himself with these two girls. Like,
yeah.
Well, I was also...
He just, like... Right, he shows to, like... He's just kind of, like...
Yeah, because they're like...
The Rise of Rocks, hug!
They're like, oh, you get the part. And then he, like, literally appears...
He manifests,
stage, right?
yes.
And he's like... Yeah, like,
I live at the school now.
It seems like he
what?
Has
if
no
he,
friends.
If he
yeah.
lived, if he lived in the ceiling, I would have believed it.
Yeah.
No, my thing was
he lives in the walls.
That's what I'm saying. Sam is a ghost. That's why he keeps appearing to
yeah.
help them out.
Oh,
he's
God.
Actually dead, and they're the only two that can see him. Piggybacking off of what Brendan had just been saying, I didn't realize liked it this until he said it. I like that the movie was not about like Lola and Ella or Lola and. Carla fighting over a man. Sam was not offered up as this prize to be clawed over, which I thought was really cool.
It is, yeah, they're like, I'm not going to say it's a feminist movie because I don't think
no.
it is. But like, it is kind
no.
of nice that like there is no real drama over men in this movie at all.
No,
like,
which
they
is
don't
refreshing.
Care, like. Sam could be removed from the story with very minimal, like...
This movie passes the Bechdel.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Yeah.
So many times.
Yeah, for better or for worse, it passes the Bechdel
yeah.
well,
test.
Which
many times
I think this movie is proof that the Bechdel test is not...
Is a flawed...
Foolproof.
Right,
well,
no, again, it's more of a discussion
yeah.
than,
well,
like,
and the
an
Bechdel test,
tool.
I think, is to be taken as one part of a larger analysis.
Right,
no, for
it's,
sure.
it's more just, like, let's think about it.
It's,
more
when,
than, like,
when,
this
it's
is...
when people say, like, does it pass it? If so, it's good.
Yeah.
No,
right,
no, no,
which is not true.
Which, again, as this movie proves, it is not necessarily
which, by the way, so it's admirable it passes the Bechdel test. It's admirable that more than that, you know, multiple named female characters have a discussion that's not about men.
Right.
However, this movie is a flaming garbage fire.
Yeah.
This is what the movie's doing to me, and it's hot in here.
Okay. So do we?
Yeah.
Fixes?
It went right above
fixes?
Me.
I have nothing to talk. I have very little time. I can sum it up in very quickly.
All right.
I think that number one, just because I don't care about Sam and I think Adam Garcia is attractive and I am all about this concept, I wanted the romantic thing to be with Stu Wolf and not Sam. Because I just think that'd be, like, what a crazy ending to a fucked up crazy movie is that, like, she starts dating a rock star.
In that situation,
though, probably 10 years or so.
The movie would have to commit to being crazy and fucked up.
It would. But I also think that this movie should be, like, it should have taken AbFab as its model more than, like, a
yes.
high school movie.
Because,
I would have
loved that.
I would have loved
it. Should,
it.
Like, these are, like, Ella is, like, the daughter in AbFab.
Mm-hmm.
In that, like, she's the one sane person. And everyone else is just, like, a
bananas.
Like, a narcissistic, selfish individual who you just have to kind of put up with and struggle with as they, like, go through their, like, over-dramatized life issues,
mm-hmm.
which are life and death to them, but which are meaningless to, like, an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of watch these two, like, bitch characters fight it out over, like, stupid shit, and it's satirical and funny in that respect.
That would
and
have been entertaining, which
she ends up with a selfish, drunk rock star, and it's, like, a perfect relationship.
Yeah.
Because they're, like, two selfish, narcissistic individuals.
Yeah.
And that's my fix. That's it.
By the way, if that movie was being made, I'd go see it tomorrow. It sounds great. Okay, my fix starts similar to Lee's in spirit, in that I do think this movie should commit more to a more of like a fucked up, darkly comic idea. I figured I was going to probably be the only one who sympathized really with Ella. I would actually retool the movie around her, and I would build this up as more of her journey in encountering these pointless, way blown out of proportion conflicts between Carla and Lola, and her coming to learn that she doesn't need to be a part of this shit. And it would also sort of subvert and unpack that typical teen movie of, like, the new girl in school is going to be the hero that rises up and topples the social order for good. It would be, you know, about Ella being kind of dragged into these terrible, terrible schemes and just sort of finding her way out of it and realizing she doesn't need a shitty friend like Lola. I think in terms of, like, tone inspiration, I would turn towards Election, which is probably one of my favorite high school movies. It manages to be both believable but really absurdist and fun and still pretty dark. So I feel like that is the kind of balance this movie could strike with that setup.
In terms of sort of like how you said with Election, a sort of the movie that I was thinking, but not quite to the extent that it is, but in terms of like, I would love a sort of weird magic realism going throughout this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, like the tone, like not the tone maybe, but the style, I think is a better way to say it, would be something similar to Better Off Dead, where it's
yes.
like, it's a ridiculous universe and ridiculous things happen, but no one thinks it's weird that these ridiculous
would
things
happen. Would you have to extensively write the characters to be sympathetic?
Mm-hmm. So what I, again, I yeah. have more. I think this is a weird thing, but like I'm surprised it isn't. It should just be a performing arts school. Like, that is it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's why they have a ridiculous budget to do this dumbass musical at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it is, like, everyone does performing arts. That is why that, like, everyone is, like, a drama or art kid. So that is why, like, this bitchy girl wants to have the lead in the musical because she is, like, a drama kid. The musical should be all of Act 3 because I love Eliza Rocks. I think all of Act 3...
I think our fixes have a lot to do with what we're really fixated on.
I agree. Oh, I 100% agree. I especially like how your fix ends with you dating Lola's dad.
Yeah!
Okay, I'm sorry. How does with you
that
moving
be,
in with Lola's dad?
That would be Lola dating her own dad.
Yes.
No. Stu Wolf, the older.
Oh
man.
My god.
Stu
okay.
an older man.
That
character.
Was amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, but you're right because you like
I'm
you were you all about Stu Wolf. I was all about Ella, and he's all about Eliza Rocks.
Right.
We all chose the things we liked.
So okay. So again, this is all of Act 3. So we get a lot more of like the ridiculousness of it. We get some different pop songs, and they're like, it's not going to be constantly just this, but like you'll see backstage things and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There should be. So the weirdest thing for me is that this story focuses so heavily on a Pygmalion adaptation, but like. I'm thinking of something like Easy A, which is more or less an adaptation of The Scarlet Letter,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, it's patterned after this. At the very least, like, something should be learned from focusing so heavy on Pygmalion. Like, she should take some sort of lesson away from this. And maybe that lesson is because Eliza Doolittle is this character who starts out as, like, a common girl and becomes, like, this glamorous person and
yeah.
then sort of realizes that, like, you know, I am my own person now instead. Like, people will, like, do whatever they want to do with me, but, like, this is who I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, like, she needs that realization at the end that she takes away from Pygmalion. The other, like, bigger thing I would say is that Ella should be Sam. And that Sam should be, like, her best friend
oh.
character. Instead of having, like,
I like
these
that.
Two characters,
yeah.
it should be her platonic, like, guy friend. And he's a little more of, like, a nervous, like, kind of guy. They get along really well. There's less of, like, that shoehorned romance at the end. Like, they are friends.
Thank you.
Sam doesn't get enough to do, and Ella is not a whole character. So combine them all, and I think it's a little more interesting if it is Sam instead.
It's totally more interesting because you rarely see that in high school movies really
right.
being done, where it's a platonic relationship between a male and a female, and I like that.
Yeah.
I also am dying to see more of Eliza Rocks. I think that would be a much
oh.
more entertaining movie.
Yeah, incidentally, guys, I'm working on my full-length production of Eliza Rocks. Auditions are going to be tomorrow. Please prepare a Sid Arthur number.
Oh, no.
Don't move on.
Yes. I'm going to learn it by
move,
ear.
Don't go. Don't move on. And then that's all it is for like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And then there's like one other line.
Don't worry about sheet music, though. I'm going to figure out how to play it.
Don't move on. Don't move on.
And there's the shot of Sam in the back with the Morticia, where he has like
the band of light
across his eyes, like Morticia in the Addams Family movies. Oh, beautiful.
Do we have anything else to say about this shit
well,
movie?
Megan Fox theme?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
There is that sting, that musical sting of uh-oh, plays whenever Megan Fox, like, enters and once as her car drives past. And you almost expect the characters to be like, do you hear the Carla Santini theme playing?
Do you hear the uh-oh?
Carla's approaching. Look.
It, like, proceeds or showing up to, like...
Also, Brendan pointed out earlier, there's a really weird runner of like, a flamingo motif.
Yeah, there's a weird flamingo motif. Guys...
Well, drinking game.
Says
look
she's
for
a flamingo.
Right, but it's also like even
flamingos
at like
pop up in Carly's
at Carla's house. There is a flamingo in the fountain. Like, what is the deal with flamingos? Anyone recommend it?
No.
No, just look up the music video for that girl.
Yeah, I literally
leave it there.
It'll give you the cliff notes.
I feel like for me, it's a short ass movie, so like you can get through it easily enough. Like if you were a little intoxicated, it could be entertaining. But again, watch the Eliza Rocks number.
Yeah, watch the Eliza Rocks and watch the That Girl.
My thing with that is, it's such a chore, and I do not find this movie to be joylessly bad. I don't find it to be that enjoyable, and I feel like there's so many other high school movies that do what this movie tried to do so much better. So, like, just watch Mean Girls or Heathers or
the
whatever.
The best thing you can do when you have to watch this whole movie is gape at the outfits.
Yeah. There's
what
a lot
the fuck is
to
happening?
Gape at in this movie. And also, like, for me, frankly, like, coming off of Southland Tales, like, I wanted, like, something dumb and something, that, like, something dumb and short. And this is both.
When you do it like this, this is a great palate cleanser.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I still use the prime example of, like, the just insanity of Southland Tales and a movie where people can say things like, I'm a pimp and pimps
don't
commit
suicide.
As, like,
no one rocks the cock like Christian now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so frankly, compared to, like, something as, like, it requires so much thought as that. Like, it was kind of nice to turn my brain off and just be like, how do you fix this dumb movie? You do this. Moving on.
It's pretty fucking simple.
Yeah.
But the problem is it sounds like nobody saw the problem to begin with.
Yeah.
So with that, I think that's all we got to say about this shitty movie tonight, guys. Yeah. As always, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/whitewatchpodcast.
Yes.
Find us on Twitter, which twitter.com/whywatchpodcast.
Or just at whywatchpodcast on Twitter.
Twitter.com.
Yes.
HTTP.
Yes. myspace.com/whywatchpodcast. Be our top 8.
And check out our website. It's a work in progress, but it's getting there, guys.
Yeah.
Dratpack.com is the website that you
That's
should look for.
That's all you need to do.
All right.
So we're going to buy it out?
Yes.
3, 2, 1.
Bye.
Bye.
Uh-oh.